And just like that, the combine is over. It is wild that the week has come and gone this quickly. But we just got done with day two of scrimmages. A lot to take away. We had a couple guys pull out. We're going to talk about ramifications, impact, who showed out, who kind of left us wanting a little more. Next, let's party. Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, hanging out solo today. Everyone else was in transit, and I am myself somewhat in transit, but we had two really fun scrimmages with a lot to take away today to round out and cap off a really, really awesome week at the 2026 NBA Draft Combine. So we're going to dive through day two scrimmages. But before we get to breaking down the teams and everyone who performed, we had two major withdrawals from these scrimmages. And typically we get a little more than just two. I thought it was really interesting that we only had two. It wouldn't have shocked me if we would have had a few more, but I was really happy to see pretty much everyone come back and play. And that should tell you a lot about how kind of murky this fringe first round is for a lot of guys and how the second round could potentially look. But we had Cam Carr and Dalen Swain withdraw, and the Cam Carr one made a lot of sense. Going into the game, Carr was a kind of a surprise that he was even playing to begin with. I thought he had shown enough, and he was going to be a first round lock regardless, but I thought it was kind of clear cut. It's like, yeah, this is going to be a top 20 dude, because when we look at 3-and-D wings in this class, there really aren't any. And Cam Carr is a really good player, don't get me wrong. But when we look at that archetype, he is pretty clear cut number one with a bullet in that archetype. And I think this scrimmage further cemented that idea. Obviously, just, you know, I hope you recognize what we do here. And none of these individual measurements, none of these testing drills, not a single scrimmage, none of this changes our evaluation. It's just another data point. So as I run through all of these takeaways and reactions, please remember that not if a guy had an awesome scrimmage or a bad one, I promise it is not completely changing my evaluation. But they do matter. And what Cam Carr did in that first scrimmage was kind of breathtaking. And he was on fire from outside. He got to the rim. He showed off his athleticism with a handful of monster dunks. He was good on the boards. And then defensively, he had two big blocks, one at the rim and then a closeout blocking a corner three-pointer as well. So it's like, oh, there's that massive wingspan coming into play. And he was by far the story of the combine, and the testing was great. The shooting drills were great. His scrimmage was by far the best individual performance. And we were joking at halftime. It's like, shut him down now. Like, don't even come out for the second half. But that's, you know, kind of a testament to who Cam Carr is as a player, that the dude just wants to play. He wants to compete. And the fact that he went out there in the first place to not only prove that, yeah, I'm a top 20 guy, but I'm potentially a lottery guy, I thought that was really telling and really admirable for what he wants out of the 2026 NBA draft. The other withdrawal was Dalen Swain. And this one I thought was a little puzzling. With Swain, I was surprised that Swain was playing to begin with, because I assumed that his stock was in a really good place. He's had an incredible season at Texas, and that is the overwhelming sample of his evaluation. What he did at Texas this year was incredible. He grew as a passer, as a pick and roll creator. He was someone who could get to the rim whenever he wanted. His ability to play that point forward, that wing creator role for Texas, and take on a massive burden of creation responsibility was awesome. I was shocked that he was playing. In the scrimmage, though, he played a role more conducive to what he's probably going to be asked to do in the NBA, and that's be an off-ball guy. And he was invisible. It was really disappointing how uninvolved Swain was, and there were long stretches, and we talked about this on the last pod, but there were long stretches where we just forgot he was out there. And for a guy who has top 20 lottery aspirations, it's tough. It's really, really tough. So the fact that he withdrew from the second scrimmage, I thought was kind of eye-popping. You could view that as, hey, we're going to try and protect your draft stock because it might be tumbling. Again, I know. It's one scrimmage. I know. I promise I know. But the general consensus seems to be that NBA teams are a lot lower on Swain than the public, than draft Twitter. I hope people are ready for that because there are going to be some really fascinating decisions and movement with Swain's draft stock in the coming weeks. And I thought if he came out and had an awesome second scrimmage, like I hoped he would, and I thought he would in the first game, he would have a really good opportunity to squash a lot of those concerns and be like, no, guys, like, I'm good. Like, yeah, I know I'm playing amongst a bunch of, you know, potential draft picks here, but I'm the guy. And I expected him to come out and have a Cam Carr type of performance. Scrimmage one, he didn't. Whatever. It's one scrimmage. But the fact that he didn't come out and do that in scrimmage two, I was kind of bummed. So it doesn't change, you know, drastically alter my evaluation of him. I promise it doesn't. But I hope everyone is at least starting to mentally prepare that Dalen Swain may not have as many diehard fans in the league as he does in the public. So awesome season, just a weird, weird week for him. All right, let's dive into the actual teams, the guys who did play, and we're just going to go team by team here. So, you know, if you're looking at timestamps and want to follow along that way, you know, pull up one of the myriad rosters that were shared on socials. But I'm just going to go by the team names and guys who really stood out in that realm. So with the first scrimmage number three total, we're going to start with Team Rivers because they were awesome in the first game today. Team Rivers ended up winning 100-276, and this pains me. This pains me, but Jeremy Fears was incredible. And I joke that it pains me because I'm a Michigan fan. So Jeremy Fears was so much fun. And Michigan State fans, I get why you love this dude. I got it before, but what he does out on the court is so much fun. And when you look at the box score, you know, only 3 of 9 shooting, 9 points. It's like, oh, whoop-de-doo. Like, what's the big deal? But and he got off to a little bit of a shaky start. And in that first quarter, he was making erratic decisions. He was throwing the ball all over the place. It's like, this isn't the Jeremy Fears I know. But then he settled down and looked incredible. Just the way that he operates the offense, the way that he's constantly hyping everyone up, talking to everyone and during every second of the game, whether he's on the bench or on the court. He's communicating rotations and switches and coverages on defense. He's directing guys on offense. He's a step ahead of the defense and knowing what they want to do and how to counter it. Ended up with 11 assists, 2 steals, 7 turnovers, super uncharacteristic for him. But a lot of those came early where he was a little too loose with the ball and 3 rebounds. So is Fears ever going to be a star starting point guard? Probably not, but he doesn't need to be because his upside as a really high quality backup point guard, as a team leader, as a locker room guy, there's a tremendous amount of value in that. And the way that everything, all of the intangibles and cliches that Fears brings to the table is going to be obnoxious for other fans, but it's very, very real. I still think he should go back to Michigan State, but it wouldn't totally shock me if he just says, hey, you know what? Screw it. Let's go pro. Like, let's just take the jump. because if he really commits to being in this draft and staying in this draft, he's NBA teams are going to love him and definitely swing on him in the second round. The other guy I thought was phenomenal for Team Rivers was Ryan Conwell. In the first scrimmage, Conwell was just okay. He didn't make a major impact, but I thought his situation and just like the guys he was playing with, it wasn't super conducive to what he's best at. He was one of the guys who did switch teams because of the withdrawals, and I thought it benefited him a ton. He ended up only shooting 5 of 12 from the floor, but got to the line 7 times, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 21 points overall. And his shot is gorgeous. And the way that his passing has improved year over year, he made some incredible reads in the flow of the offense, finding cutters, setting up the roller. He was stellar. And it was the exact type of stuff that you want to see from a rotation 2 guard who can potentially step in right away and give an NBA team, you know, a handful of solid minutes off the bench, because we know how good of a shooter he is, but the athleticism and physical strength that he also brings to the table is super impressive. And then the way that his handle and passing and decision making continue to grow and improve, he's not a point guard, but as a secondary creator, someone who can set up others or make decisions and create in the flow of the offense or in an off-ball role where he can attack closeouts and make an impact that way. Really, really fun stuff. I would be pretty surprised if he does sneak into the first round, but who knows, because this class could get gutted by withdrawals. I would be shocked if he made it out of the top 40, and he seems like a prime candidate for one of those early second round priority, the priority second round guys who end up earning like a legitimate NBA contract. The final guy on Team Rivers who stood out in a really positive way was Dylan Mitchell yet again. Really solid game. And it's not flashy, it's not the sexiest, but it is constantly effective. Ended up with 13 points on 6 of 6 shooting, 6 rebounds, 4 of them offensive, 4 assists, 1 steal. He just knows how to play. He knows exactly who he is. He knows he's not a shooter, and he doesn't try to be. He makes quick decisions. He can handle the ball a bit, so he can get downhill when needed. But his instincts away from the ball and his ability to cut back door and play off of the shooting and scoring gravity of his teammates to then find open pockets to exploit the defense, whether it's on cuts or just off-ball movement that results in offensive rebounds and generating extra possessions and tip dunks, it's special. And the defense has always been his calling card, and it just continues to shine. So Dylan Mitchell is a guy that I would love to swing on in the second round. And if his ceiling can kind of be like a more explosive Kyle Anderson, that's a really fun player. That is a really fun player and someone who's going to play in the league for a decade. So yeah, it'd be great if he turns into like a 40% corner 3-point shooter. That'd be incredible. But I'm not sure that he has to. I think he has enough outlier traits with his rebounding, athleticism, defense, and passing where there's going to be a role for him in the NBA. Tyler Nickel is just okay, just a little too streaky of a shooter this week. I was really hoping he would light the Nets on fire, just kind of on and off. Jacob Coffey had a solid game. I still think he should return to school, build off of this combine. He had a great week, great weekend, but build off of what he showed here and just really make sure that he's a force next year and someone where every single possession on both ends of the floor, we're feeling his impact and we're feeling his versatility and his size and his athleticism, because he has some fun advanced numbers in college, but way too often he just disappears from games and you don't really feel his impact from start to finish. This week was arguably the most I've consistently noticed him when he's on the court. Ugonna Nyenso was a kind of a bummer. I really liked him coming into this week and left a little cooler. I still think he has a lot of fun tools to be like a third center in a rotation. Great length. We know the shot blocking stuff, but he got caught in no man's land in drop coverage a lot, gave up way too many lobs. And the defensive rebounding is, it's just not good. He's really good on the offensive glass, but he was also super quiet out there. We didn't see him talking once. Maybe he was, and he's just a little quieter, but if you're going to be that cornerstone primary rim protector, I need to hear you out there, especially when we're looking at guys like Isaiah Nelson and Ruben Chinyelo and Terrace Reed and Flory Badunga, like his peers who were out there. We were constantly hearing them direct and call out coverages and rotations and switches and all that kind of stuff. And I never really heard Onyenso. Jacoby Gillespie, awesome first scrimmage, but it's the story with Gillespie his entire career, where it's like one incredible game, one dud. And I was really worried. I was like, oh man, is he going to come into this game and go 2 for 14 or something? Because he was lights out in that first scrimmage, and he wasn't quite that bad, but he was 5 for 12 and only 3 of 8 from three. Really streaky. One turnover, 3 assists, 5 rebounds, 15 points. So he was okay, but it was just that classic Jacoby Gillespie trend of everything is super up and down. So I still like him as a second round guy. I would bet he gets drafted. I'd be really surprised if he doesn't get drafted, but I'm not sure that the long-term upside is much more than a fringe backup point guard. Let's move on to, let's see here, Team Carpenter, who kind of did not have a great day. Well, obviously they didn't have a great day. They lost by 24. So kind of tough to be super pumped about that. The standout, I guess, was Ruben Chinyelo with 14 points, 15 rebounds. It was a pretty empty 14 and 15 for as impressive as that double-double is. It felt just inflated. It didn't feel like a dominant, imposing 14 and 15, which kind of adds up with a 24-point loss. So Chinyelo's tough because his rebounding at Florida this year was incredible. We saw that all week. He is a physical presence, but his hands are really rough right now. He was constantly dropping entry passes, dropping rebounds, letting defenders poke it away too easily, and missing layups. So there were a bunch of me bounds in there, and there was a lot of missed opportunities. He left food on his plate a little too frequently. So I would love to see him go back to Florida. I know that front court is getting very crowded right now, but it kind of always has been since he's been there. He desperately needs to improve his hands. And if a ball goes near him, there's no excuse for him not to gobble it up because he's too big. He's too powerful. He's too athletic to not capitalize on every single one of those opportunities. The two other big positive standouts were Matt Abel, who was 6 of 16 shooting, 4 of 9 from 3, 4 rebounds, just 1 assist on 17 points. Solid numbers, not crazy, but when you just watch him out there operating, the kid just knows how to play. And he's not going to be day one ready if a team is using a first-round pick on him. I really hope that they're prepared to be patient and give him a really detailed and planned and rigorous first year of development, because he is so far away from being competent in NBA minutes that if you just throw him out there, it's going to be really bad. But long-term, there is so much to unlock. And once the end result starts matching what his process looks like, what his decision-making looks like, what his off-ball movement and offensive creation looks like, he's going to be a really good player. And in the past, this has been the classic pre-draft guy where you try and draft him a year early from where he should be. And you try and get him at 27 before he really explodes. And the next year he goes fifth And I think Matt Abel is the exact type of guy who fits that description. The problem is that we're seeing fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer of those guys, because instead of being buried on a bench and potentially forgotten about in an NBA system, they just go back to college, they play, and they get paid. So Abel probably should go back to UNC, but if a team in the first round has a really specific plan and how to develop him over the next 12 to 18 months and is willing to invest those resources and that time, and he gets a promise, it wouldn't shock me if he stays in this draft. I think we need to be ready for at least one really surprising one and done freshman. And Matt Abel could very well be that. And then Jaden Bradley, not an insane scoring performance, because he never really has that. You know, 9 points on 3 of 9 shooting, 5 free throw attempts, only 2 rebounds, 3 assists, but he's so solid. And as a backup or third string point guard, I know that a lot of these roles I'm throwing out aren't the sexiest. It's like, oh, why am I getting excited about a backup or third string point guard? Well, because they matter. We constantly see how grueling the NBA season is, how guys get hurt, how they need time off just to make it through the season. And guys like Jaden Bradley are those types of guys who can step in and make sure that the drop off from the regular rotation guys isn't precipitous, and that you're not just tanking your production, because he does such a good job of keeping everyone involved, keeping the ball moving, finding open teammates, never getting too high, never getting too low, making quality decisions. And just watching him over the years, from when he was coming out of high school and his freshman year at Alabama, he was always this uber athlete who could get to the rim whenever he wanted, lightning quick, but the game was so fast for him and his decision-making was all over the place. So seeing the cerebral aspects of his game develop, and it has been really, really fun, because the game is so, so much slower for him than it was just a couple of years ago. And I think he's going to be a really, really quality value find in the second round. Unfortunately, that's kind of it for positives for Team Carpenter. They were pretty rough. Bruce Thornton was really, unfortunately, a disappointment this week. First scrimmage, they had him playing off ball almost entirely, and you would never know he was out there. It's a role that he probably hasn't played since high school. Even if that, the ball has always been in his hand. He's always been super dominant running the pick and roll. We saw him moved off ball mostly in that first scrimmage, and he was a ghost. He was a little more on ball in this one, but only 1 of 4 shooting, 2 assists, 4 turnovers. It was a tough weekend for Bruce Thornton, and the intel that you hear about him is incredibly positive. I still wouldn't be shocked if he's drafted in the second round for that kind of backup third string point guard role that we've been talking about, because he's always been a good leader. He's going to be a great locker room guy. And he's someone who you can bring into your locker room, into the end of the bench, and he's not going to disrupt stuff. He's going to work hard. He's going to try and earn minutes. He's going to try and push his teammates and push himself, but he's not going to cause problems. And that is way more valuable than people may think. Emmanuel Sharp was tough, only 3 of 12 shooting today. And I still love him. His defense all week was awesome. He's so physical. He's really tough on that end. Just way too streaky of a shooter. And then Isaiah Nelson was really underwhelming. Love how much he's talking out there. Love how much he's communicating. But the shot is one of the slowest shots you'll ever see. I don't know how he contributes necessarily on the offense. I think there's a lot more defensively that can continue to be unlocked. But it did seem like NBA teams were a little cooler on him. He's a good player, but I don't think he necessarily did anything in either of these games to be like, oh, this is the big time sleeper. Cause I'm 2 of 8 shooting today. There were a lot of missed bunnies. I believe in the first scrimmage, he was 0 for 0 shooting. So I guess this is a step in the right direction, but he's never going to be asked to be a major scorer or anything like that. I do think there are still some fun outcomes where he's like a Paul Reed type of backup big, because some of the rebounding and defensive playmaking stuff that he did showcase, he had one really, really nice rotation block where he was in drop coverage, played a nice little cat and mouse game, recovered to his man, ball handler went up for a layup. He rotated back over, quick off the floor, pinned it against the glass, and they ran out and transitioned the other way. So that kind of stuff, I wish it was a little more consistent and a little more prevalent, but the flashes are like, oh, okay, maybe in an 8 to 12 minute a role, kind of, or 8 to 12 minute a night type of role, that kind of stuff can be really, really fun. All right, let's jump over to Team Adams, who beat Team Weems 94-76. Team Adams looked really good. They had a couple of the more impressive performances of the day. And I want to start out with a guy that we haven't talked about much, really much at all on this pod, but someone who I've really enjoyed since his freshman year at Ohio State. Felix Akpara had a really nice game, 6 of 8 shooting, 7 rebounds, 1 block, 15 points. He was just really solid. We know how explosive and like the vertical spacing that he can provide and the shot blocking he can provide. And he's almost like the low maintenance center version of Jacoby Gillespie. I know this is a bit of a reach, but in the sense of one game is going to be really good and he's going to be super impactful. He's going to be throwing down lobs. He's going to be grabbing every rebound. He's going to be getting a couple blocks, playing really good defense. And then the next game, he's going to be in foul trouble and you don't feel him quite as much. And he just kind of goes through the motions. So I'm not sure he has starter upside, but solid backup big. Absolutely. And it was good to see him finish this week with a really strong performance in the scrimmage. Along those same lines, Braden Smith was really good. Another guy, backup, third string point guard. I know, sorry, folks, but that's what most of these guys in these games are going to be. They're going to be guys who are fighting for those end of the rotation spots and providing and really elevating the locker room and the leadership and all of the intangibles and pushing guys while maybe not getting as many minutes as they potentially dream of. But these are still really important roles, and we see all of the good teams have a lot of guys like this. So I just continue to be really impressed with how Braden Smith runs the offense and initiates everything and keeps everyone involved and picks his spots. He had 7 assists to 1 turnover, 9 points, was a game high plus 21. The defense is what it is. You know, he's feisty. He's smart. He had 3 steals in this game, 1 block even. But he's going to get targeted just because of the size. I think he does a better job than others his size at like putting up a bit of resistance. He struggled in that first scrimmage with Jaden Bradley, but I thought he was better in this one. Communication, IQ, feel, all of that kind of stuff just really popped for him. Terrace Reed also had a really nice end to the week for him. 7 of 9 shooting, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 17 points. He's just a mammoth. Like, he's so big. Like, his legs are about the size of my waist. Not together, you know, just each leg is about the size of my midsection. He's literally a dancing bear out there. The fact that he moves his feet laterally as well as he does, the fact that he keeps his pivot foot and can execute spin post moves and operate out of the short roll as well as he does is mind-boggling. His defense today was really fun. He was consistently switching in space, sliding his feet, bumping drivers off their line, contesting without fouling. He was awesome. Today looked more like the guy that we saw in the tournament than we saw in the first scrimmage. The first scrimmage, he was a little underwhelming, but today he was rebounding, he was scoring, he was defending, he was passing. His passing growth has been tremendous, because I mean, you go back to what he was at Michigan and the lack of passing that we saw from him there, it's like a totally different person. So I was really glad to see him end on a really high note, because I do think he's one of these bigs where if you're a playoff team and you need center depth, you need a backup center who can help you immediately. Looking at you, Denver. I think Terrace Reed would be an incredible fit and someone who you can more or less plug and play right off the bat. I kind of think, like, worst case scenario, he's Andre Drummond, or like not worst case. That's offensive to Andre Drummond. But like middle tier outcomes, why couldn't Terrace Reed be Andre Drummond? And Andre Drummond has made a ton of money. He's had a really good career, and he's stuck around playing important minutes for a long time because he's an elite rebounder and he's a massive human being who moves way better than most people his size. And Terrace Reed fits a lot of that while also being a really, really good passer. So Terrace Reed, fantastic job. Billy Richmond was chaotic. He was fun. Only 4 of 11 shooting. He had a couple air balls. That'll happen with Billy. But the shot still continues to trend the right way. The way that he just moves out there is unlike anyone else on the court. He's so fluid and twitchy and explosive. Like, it's like he's shot out of a cannon where he is just going 100% all the time. And it's like, oh, there's a brick wall in front of me. That's fine. I'll just run straight through it. And there's like a careless abandon to how he approaches the game that is infectious. And even when he went crashing into the seats or getting hacked midair and tumbling to the ground, he's always getting up laughing. And there was one turnover that he forced where he deflected a pass and it nicked off his man's fingers, and it ended up being Billy's ball, and he's just cackling to himself that he caused a turnover. I still have no idea what he's going to do. I love him. I would take him in the first round. I think there's still so much with his shot that's waiting to be unlocked, and when you pair it with his slashing ability and his defense and his motor and all of the intangibles that you can't quantify, he's someone I would love. Absolutely love to have in my rotation. Baba Miller had a little coming down to earth game today. He was still good, don't get me wrong. 13 points on 4 of 9 shooting, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, doing a little bit of everything. Is a little more stat padding today. I thought scrimmage one, he was terrific. Today he was okay. When he plays within himself and when he plays his role and when he doesn't try to do too much, he looks so much better because he's a good rebounder, really smart, dynamic passer. But then he would try and do too much. And there were multiple times where he spent at least 15 seconds dribbling and going nowhere, accomplishing nothing, and just draining the shot clock and then throwing a grenade to someone else, being like, well, here you go. I wasted the entire shot clock. Now you figure it out. Baba's going to get drafted. He's going to be a top 60 guy. We need to cool it a little bit on the first round stuff. I would be shocked if he's a first rounder, unless literally everyone leaves. Then who knows? I guess we're swinging. But I think he did enough this week to really spark some legitimate interest and be like, this is a lottery ticket that we're willing to buy in the top 45 picks. Let's see. Aaron Nkrumah, another really solid game today and a fantastic week overall. We've talked about him a few times, I know, but ended today 5 of 9 shooting overall, 3 of 6 from 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover, 15 points. Keon Ellis, that's the archetype that you're looking at with Nkrumah. He gets a little handsy on defense, needs to get a lot stronger, but good hands, really good instincts, jumping passing lanes, really physical, really competitive, didn't shy away from anyone else out there, didn't shy away from physicality. It's going to be fascinating to see where he goes, because at this rate, I bet he gets drafted, unless they try and steer him somewhere as a UDFA guy, where maybe there's a team who's not picking until like the very end of the second, and there's some agent shenanigans. You never know. It happens more than you'd like to know. But his 3-and-D right now, like super low maintenance. When he was at his worst, he was trying to create and do too much, and that he's never going to be asked or really allowed to do that in the NBA. So I'm not too worried about it. When he was playing off ball as a spot up shooter, movement shooter, so, you know, pushing in transition, jumping passing lanes, he looked awesome. So Aaron Nkrumah probably made himself a ton of money this week, and could be on his way to starting a really, at least interesting, if not exciting, NBA career. Milo Suzan, it was a bummer. He couldn't buy a shot today. There were some really gorgeous passes. You can see how smart he is, how well he reads the game, but everything with him when he gets downhill ends in a floater, and the jump shot wasn't falling at all today, which is unfortunately a common theme. He was 1 of 8 shooting. I really, really wanted – I've been holding out hope. It was like, oh, man, like I see like an Andrew Nembhard type of guy here, but he just still struggles way too much to create and to separate on the ball. He can't really get to his spots consistently, so – is unfortunately a tough week. It was a tough scrimmage. I still think a team's probably going to swing on him with backup hopes, third string point guard hopes. But all of the concerns that we've all had with his game throughout the season, throughout the years, just continue to pop up today. And when the shot's not falling, it's a tough look, unfortunately. Kind of same thing with John Blackwell, where when he's not scoring, I don't know what he's given. Because, yeah, sure, there are a few flashes of competitive physical defense, but his passing especially today, his passing was always like him throwing the ball to where the guy was a second ago and not where they were going. It was always reactionary. It was never his initial instinct. He was 1 of 7 shooting today. He struggled under pressure. He got turned a lot on defense. He's a 2-guard and just kind of like a scoring guard. So I'd be floored if he doesn't go back to Duke. I know he's wearing Duke stuff in all of the interviews, and I'd expect him to go to Duke and hopefully play off of Caden Boozer and Rippey, because I don't see point guard in his future, because just the playmaking instincts and accuracy are way too far away from where they need to be. That's kind of it for Team Adams. Let's jump over to Team Weems and wrap this up. They did lose by 18. Nick Marinelli's super funky. 6 of 11 shooting today, 5 rebounds, 13 points. I don't know what to do with him. He's tough, he's physical, but nothing in his game makes any sense to me. You could tell me that he ends up playing in the league for almost a decade as a gritty backup, like a Jay Sean Tate, like a Kendrick Williams, and I believe you. You could tell me that he never even sniffs the NBA, and I'd believe you. It's just a funky game that I have no idea what to do with. He had an awesome career at Northwestern that, again, none of it made sense to me, but it happened, and good things tended to follow, and that was just kind of the common theme with him. Just so many lefty push shots. So he's weird. He's funky. Wouldn't shock me if someone falls in love with him and just does like an OKC Brooks Barnheiser type of thing, and they just grab him in the second. I thought the biggest positive standout was Nick Boyd, which probably sounds like a bit of an exaggeration for a guy who went 1 of 4 with 2 points. But he also had 5 assists, 3 rebounds, and was defending his butt off. Like, for a team that lost by 18, Nick Boyd was only a -1. The way he was super competitive on defense, he was picking up guys full court, he was talking, he was working, and he's in this year at Wisconsin, he was a really good defensive playmaker and caused a lot of havoc, but he also had like some monster scoring performances. So the fact that we got to see him make a major impact doing the little things without scoring, I thought was really encouraging, because he's out there proving that it's like, yeah, no, I don't need the ball. I don't need to be getting buckets to make an impact. And I don't care that we're getting blown out. Obviously he cared, but it's my effort's not stopping. I am going 100% until that whistle blows, and I'm going to make life as difficult as humanly possible every minute I'm out there. And it was one of the most impressive 1-for-4 shooting performances I saw. And if it wasn't for that type of for the defense he was playing, for some of the passes he was making, I would have been like, well, Nick, I hope you have a great career in Europe. And that may still be his ultimate outcome. But if I was an NBA team, I'd be really interested in trying to bring him in and see if there's more there that can be unlocked, because he had a really fun season, and it was a really refreshing way for him to cap off his combine week. Otago Away was really, really solid as well. 6-of-14 shooting, 10 free throw attempts, 5 rebounds, 1 steal, 2 turnovers, 21 points. It was a lot of what we saw from him at Kentucky, with getting downhill relentlessly, but it came in that off-ball role. He played really good defense, really physical, really disciplined, but it was a lot of really smart, dynamic off-ball shot creation and offensive creation from him, which is crucial, because he's not going to – what he was allowed to or asked to do at Kentucky, that's never going to be his role in the NBA. He's never going to be that ball dominant, and seeing that translate into more of an off-ball, low-maintenance role immediately in kind of a chaotic setting – super encouraging, and something that I hope he continues to lean into and sell these teams on as he continues with workouts and interviews, because that's the type of player he is and needs to be at the next level. And then finally, just want to touch again on Tyler Tanner, who unfortunately struggled yet again. Just 1-of-7 shooting, 0-for-4 from 3, 5 assists, 3 turnovers, 2 points, 2 steals. Is a bummer. It was a real, real bummer. Tanner just unfortunately looked kind of overwhelmed and really nervous out there. Not nervous like he didn't know what he was doing, just like he cared a lot. And it just looked a little too much for him out there, unfortunately. Now, on the positive side, the common theme throughout both games was his defense was really solid. He touched the ball a lot, gained deflections, and being really disruptive, moving his feet. The defense overall was really, really good. But you can't take a 5'10 point guard for his defense, regardless of how good it is, because we also saw him get targeted every time down the court. There was a sequence of about 6 or 7 straight possessions in the second half where the other team was just switching him in pick and roll, or whenever, if they got cross matched in transition, they would immediately go down to the block, seal him off, clear out that side of the floor, and call for the ball. And it's unfortunate, because Tanner's a fun player. He's really, he tried to hold his own, but at the end of the day, just that physical mismatch was way too much. So, and he's fundamentally tremendous on defense. Hands are tremendous on defense, but there is just that natural physical limitation that was actively getting sought out and exploited in an NBA combine scrimmage. And then if the offense is as shaky as it was all week, it's a really tough combination, because in the first game he knocked down a couple threes, but the playmaking was all over the place. He wasn't seeing the floor well. He never got downhill. In the second scrimmage, the playmaking was a lot better. He was seeing the floor a little better. He was a little more deliberate about getting paint touches and collapsing the defense. He never really shot at the rim, but used that rim pressure to create for others. And he made a couple of really nice kickout passes. So I was like, okay, cool. he took a deep breath, he calmed down, and he's seen the floor a little bit better than he was yesterday. But the shot was all over the place, and he's only made one. And it wasn't even that stuff was just rimming out. Like, he wasn't even close. There was a period where he airballed two or three straight shots. So it was a real bummer. I was so excited to see Tanner in person and get that feel for he's like, all right, how chaotic and how fun and how electric is this guy going to be? And does he really have a shot at making the first round, at legitimately staying in this draft class? And at this point, I don't think he should. I know he had an incredible season at Vanderbilt, but just watching the difference between Braden Smith and Tanner was pretty glaring, because Smith was so calm and composed and polished, running the offense, operating in space, never getting sped up, getting to his spots, getting others involved, and dictating the tempo and the flow of the offense. And Tanner wasn't. He looked overwhelmed. He was getting sped up. His shot was all over the place. He was making erratic decisions. And that's okay, because he has so much time left to grow, because Braden Smith wasn't doing this his entire career. Like, he grew, and I'm not saying, trying to say Braden Smith or either of these guys was a bad player, but the way that Braden Smith got so good at that stuff was through playing and through experience and getting those reps constantly. And that's what I hope Tanner does. I hope that he goes back to Vanderbilt and plays, because the way that he gets better at the things that he really struggled at this week is by playing. And he's not going to get that opportunity by staying in the draft, being a second round pick, and getting buried at the end of an NBA bench and never getting to play. That's what I worry about. I love that he desperately wants to go pro. I love that he really wants to be in this draft class. But I think if he does stay, I'd be floored. I'd be absolutely floored if he went first round, or top 20, let alone first round. And if he does, you know, great. And I hope it works out. But my concern, because we see this all the time, we see this all the time with low round picks or later picks, is NBA teams aren't willing to invest the time and resources necessary. And the things that guys need to do to get better come from playing, come from that live game action. And coaches who are perpetually on the hot seat aren't going to put their jobs up to a raw rookie, to someone who needs time to develop. And so my hope is that he goes back to Vanderbilt, because they're going to be a really fun team again, and he could be a massive reason why he's going to have a very nice payday back at Vanderbilt. And most importantly, he's going to get to play with another year of experience, maybe 2 years of experience. It won't shock me at all if Tanner's back in the draft conversations as at very least a first round guy, if not a lot higher. Slow the game down a little bit, really improve that playmaking diversity and that ability to manipulate defenders and continue to get more consistent with the shot. Once he does, he's going to be a problem. He's going to be a really, really excellent player, not just at the college level, but the pro level. We're going to wrap it there. I know I went a little long solo here, but I wanted to try and touch on the biggest names and those who just made an impact today, who stood out and really warranted somewhat of a discussion. So the way that you guys have followed us this week throughout the combine has been incredible. I hope you all enjoyed it. It was an incredible week for us, and me specifically, since I'm the only one talking here. But I know the rest of the team had an incredible time. It was a really special event. Can't wait to be back next year, but we have so much up until the draft, through the draft, going into next year. The content never stops. The grind never stops. And the combine is just another data point. You know, that's all these continue to be, are adding data points to the collection to paint the full picture. So you can find all of our stuff at NoCeilingsNBA.com, No Ceilings on YouTube, No Ceilings on social. I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me at TMetcalf11. But if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Till next time, see ya.